Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 20, Pure Devotional Service, Text Number 5. Guna dosha bhidha drishtiya nigamate nahi svataha nigamena pavadascha bhidaya itiha brahmaha. Guna dosha bhidha drishtiya nigamate nahi svataha nigamena pavadascha bhidaya itiha brahmaha. Guna dosha bhidha drishtiya nigamate nahi svataha nigamena pavadascha vidaya itiha brahmaha. Guna dosha bhidha drishtiya nigamate nahi svataha nigamena pavadascha ibhidaya itiha brahmaha. Guna, piety. Dosha, sin. Bhidha, the difference between. Drishtihi, seeing. Nigamat, from Vedic knowledge. Te, your. Na, not. He, indeed. Swataha, automatically. Nigamena, by the Vedas. Apavadaha, nullification. Cha, also. Vidayaha, of such distinction. Iti, thus. Ha, clearly. Brahmaha, confusion. My dear Lord, the distinction observed between piety and sin comes from your own Vedic knowledge and does not arise by itself. If the same Vedic literature subsequently nullifies such distinction between piety and sin, there will certainly be confusion. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Lord Krishna states, Vedas, Vedas, there's a mistake, Vedas, they've left out an I. Vedas cha savayar aham eva vidyaha. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Is that right? Am I right or am I wrong? Vedas. V-E-D-A-I-S. Where is how I? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we get the gist of it. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta and I know the Veda as it is. Vedanta krid Veda vid eva chaham. Vedic knowledge emanates from the breathing of the personality of Godhead. Therefore, whatever Lord Krishna speaks is Veda, or perfect knowledge. The Vedic literatures are full of descriptions of piety and sin. Can you just close that door, please? But Lord Krishna's statement that one should transcend piety and sin is also to be understood as Vedic knowledge. Sri Uddhava has understood this point and therefore requests Lord Krishna to clear up an apparent contradiction. Ultimately, the material world gives the living entities a chance to satisfy their perverted desires and at the same time gradually achieve the liberation of going back home, back to Godhead. Thus, material piety must be considered a means and never an absolute end. Since the material world itself is not absolute, being temporary and limited. You can be materially pious, but when you die, that's it. Gone, finished. The personality of Godhead is himself the reservoir of all virtue and goodness. Even when he's naughty. Well, Krishna is known as Makansur, he's famous for being a thief. Right, well, that's not pious, is it? Being a thief. But here it says, Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is himself a reservoir of all virtue and goodness. So even when he's being so-called impious, he's still all good. We'll look at this. Those persons and activities that please the Lord are to be considered virtuous, and those that displease him are to be considered sinful. There cannot be any other permanent definition of these terms. If one becomes a mundane moralist, forgetting the Supreme Lord, one's position is certainly imperfect, and one will not achieve the ultimate goal of piety, going back home, back to Godhead. On the other hand, there is great fear among moralists that if the distinction between piety and sin is minimized, people will commit many atrocities in the name of God. In the modern world, there is no clear understanding of spiritual authority, and moral men consider any appeal to transcend morality to be an invitation to fanaticism, anarchy, violence, and corruption. Thus, they regard material moral principles as more important than directly trying to please God. Because this point is controversial, Uddhava is anxiously requesting the Lord to give a clear explanation. For some reason that fly has taken a liking to the top of my head. Om Agyana Timirandasya Kananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Bhagam Yurim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. It's good that you know that verse, because when I choke and can't recite it, then you do it for me. Okay, so the purport starts off with quoting Krishna. Vedascha savairaham eva vidyaha. By all of the Vedas I am to be known. The purpose for studying the Vedas is to come to this point of knowing Krishna. That's why Krishna says one needs to transcend both piety and impiety. Just as there's a description in the Bhagavad Gita of karma, and karma is described as being of three types. There's karma, which is basically relating to good karma, in other words, the good things that you should do. And then there's vikarma, which really one should avoid. There's bad karma. And if we look at karma as a universal principle of action and reaction,
as you do, so you shall reap. So if we perform pious activities, then we'll get good results back. That's generally desirable. And if we perform impious activities, vikarma, then the laws of nature are arranged in such a way so that automatically, in due course of time, the universal laws work in such a way so that if you're performing bad karma, then you get a reaction back. This is a universal principle. But there is another form of action which is called akarma. There's no reaction to such activities. Those activities are activities performed in relationship to devotional service. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karma jinavritam anukulyena krishna no shilanam bhaktir uttama. Topmost action is actually not action at all. It is not of the material world. The Vedas may encourage us, certainly we are encouraged to lead a pious life because we want to avoid sinful reactions. Vikarma generally means activities impelled by the mode of passion, and the mode of passion by the laws of nature degrades into ignorance. And so therefore the Vedas recommend for most people avoid sinful activities and embrace activities of goodness, because basically activities of goodness elevate one, elevate a person. So that's why the Vedas encourage or focus on good karma, basically. Gradually keep people in a position where at least they have an opportunity to progress, make progress. But as was pointed out to Narada Muni by Vyasadeva by Narada Muni, this is a very gradual process. And if people just get caught up in all of these ritualistic practices and activities, then they'll just stay in the material world. Because just being, as is mentioned here, being in the mode of goodness is fine, it's all and good, but if you're just in the mode of goodness but stay in the material world in a cycle of birth and death, you know, even if you're in the mode of goodness, you're going to die in the mode of goodness and still stay in the material world. Krishna says, Abrahma Bhavana Loka Puna Avatinojana. You know, from the topmost plane of existence down to the bottom, it's all a place of recycling. Right? So we're supposed to be into recycling. Well, that's the material world. It's all recycled. Everybody's being recycled. So what does it mean, then, to transcend piety and impiety? It just so happens that I was listening to a lecture yesterday and the day before. Prabhupada is giving on the nectar of devotion, and he was talking about Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, and their qualifications to serve the Nawab and to serve Lord Chaitanya. And who was the first one to leave? Which of the two was the first to leave the Nawab service? Rupa. Yeah. Rupa Goswami left. Actually, it's a very nice story, because Sanatan Goswami was still in the Nawab's employ, and he He told the Nawab that actually he was sick. Told him he was sick. He couldn't come to work. And the Nawab was really dependent on Rupa and Sanatan. He was really dependent on it. It was sort of like having, he was the king, and one was the treasurer and the other one was like the premier of the state, basically. So, you know, the key people in all of his administration. And so, you know, effectively it would be like the premier and the treasurer of Victoria joining the Hare Krishna movement. just tell it, you know, forget the state affairs, you know, we're going to join the Hare Krishna. So anyway, he told the Nawab that he couldn't come to work. He was busy. He was couldn't come to work because he was ill. And it was going on and on. And so the Nawab wanted to find out what was going on. So he went around to his place. And he found he was there with all of the devotees and they were studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he said, you better come back to work. Otherwise, anyway, Sanatan told him he was leaving, so the Nawab wasn't very impressed, so he put him in jail. That was his reward for many years of service. He was thrown in jail. Because the Nawab was waging war with the king of Puri. That was one of the reasons why Sanatan Goswami didn't want you. He said, you know, you're giving pain to Lord Jagannath by fighting with the king of Puri, and I don't want to facilitate your giving pain to Lord Jagannath. So anyway, Prabhupada then tells the story of how Sanatan Goswami got out of jail. Rupa Goswami had put aside some funds. They put aside some funds for emergencies. And Sanatan Goswami knew where those funds were and he was able to get access to them and bribe the jail keeper. Right? And first of all, he offered him 5,000 rupees. Was it? No, it wasn't rupees. I think it was gold coins, wasn't it? Gold coins. You know, like 5,000 gold coins. And he refused. I mean, because it's fairly, you know, he'd have to make it worth his while because there's a good chance that the jailkeeper is going to lose his head in any case for letting, you know, Sanatan Goswami get away. And then he offered him 10,000 coins and so that, and you know, he praised the jailkeeper. So, you know, you're a pious man. And I want to do religious work, and so you'll be elevated spiritually if you help me get away from, you know, the prison. And he also, you know, greased his palm, encouraged him his piety with a little bakshish. But the jailer had a problem. He said, what will I tell the Nawab? How can I tell him that, you know, you got away? It looked like I've just let you go. So Sanatan Goswami told him, well, you can just tell him that when I went out into the fields to pass stall, then I jumped over the bank of the Ganga and fell in the river, and the river was rushing so fast that I was swept away and you couldn't catch me, you couldn't get me. So he thought, okay, for 10,000 gold coins, that sounds like a good deal. So then Prabhupada says that Sanatan Goswami could be criticized for bribing the jailer. This is impiety. He gave the jailer money. So this is not proper behavior for a devotee, for a Vaishnava. Bribing and cheating, not proper behavior. And then Prabhupada proceeds to explain how actually it's not that in some circumstance, in some occasions, a devotee may be engaged in activities that would ordinarily be frowned upon or considered impious. But because they facilitate their devotional service, they're actually pleasing to Krishna. Anukulyena Krishnanu Shivanam Bhaktir Uttama. So the topmost devotional service are activities that are free from any material motivation. So there's no material consideration in performing the activity. The activities are done purely for the pleasure of Krishna. So that's anukulyena, means that which is pleasing to Krishna. So Prabhupada explains that Sanatana Goswami is bribing the jailkeeper so that he could be released to then go and perform his devotional service is actually not impious activity. And then Prabhupada gives some other interesting examples of such impious activities. He mentions the example of Karna, who was Prabhupada mentions he was probably the most qualified warrior on the battle of Kurukshetra. And so there was no way that Arjuna was actually going to be able to defeat him. Bhishma and Dronacharya, actually they were all superior to Arjuna. Prabhupada mentions they were all superior to Arjuna. And so, you know, it wasn't possible for Arjuna to defeat them man to man in combat. So there was a situation where Karna's chariot was stuck in the mud and he was off of the chariot trying to get the wheel out of the mud so that he could move forward. And Arjuna found him in that situation and Krishna indicated to Arjuna, okay, now kill him. Right? Now ordinarily according to the laws of combat, you know, the Kshatriya code, the chivalrous code, which is the code of piety, one shouldn't engage in combat with another who hasn't got his weapons, isn't holding his weapons. That's called cheating. Huh? And Arjuna said and Krishna said, kill him. So, he was dead. Impious. Not impious. It was anukulyena Krishnanu shilanam bhakti ruttama. It had the qualities of pleasing Krishna. At this point, that which is pleasing to Krishna, even though it may have, you know, just like, you know, Yudhisthira was known for never having told a lie. Right? Never having told a lie. Which is very honourable. Huh? It's honourable to not tell lies. It says that the bhumi cannot tolerate a liar. Right? Of course, you know, there are so much lying and cheating in this day and age. You can see what people are suffering the reactions of their impiety. But yet that was considered, even though that was Yudhishthira's, you know, one of Yudhishthira's greatest qualities, it was also considered to be one of his faults, being too stuck in piety, so that when he was asked to tell a lie, he said, oh, I can't tell a lie. But it was for Krishna, it was for Krishna's service.
Another example that Prabhupada gives is that of a famous example, because all of these are famous examples of where devotional service transcends piety and impiety. What's the classic example? What's the topmost example of devotional service? Who's the topmost example of devotional service? Yes. Where was she being impious? When were the? She's married. Well, sort of married. The gopis, not so much Radharani, but the Prabhupada mentions the gopis who left, you know, in Vedic culture or Vedic society, a young girl associating with a young boy is considered to be, you know, the worst offence. Ruin your reputation. To be rejected. Right? And even when the gopis went to Krishna in the dead of night, Krishna instructed them, what are you girls doing here? What are you doing here? You shouldn't be in the forest with a young boy. Do you want to entirely ruin your reputation? Because the gopis didn't go to see Krishna in the forest at the dead of night to hear him give moral instructions. You should go back home now. While you've got the chance, you should go back home now because you don't want to ruin your reputation. Huh? But the gopis are glorified for the fact that they abandoned Sarvadharman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. They abandoned this whole concept of piety and impiety. For the fact that service to Krishna, their love and affection for Krishna is the symbol, you know, the epitome of devotional service, not caring for any material consideration. They sacrificed everything for Krishna. Another example that Prabhupada gives is of Bali Maharaj. You know, Bali Maharaj was instructed by Shukracharya, his guru. Now, ordinarily, you do not reject the order of your guru. It's a Vedic principle. Vedic culture, you know, hinges on this principle of discipline and obedience is a key element of discipleship, if you like. And when Upendra, Vamanadev, came before Bali Maharaj begging for charity, then Shukracharya told him, it's Vishnu, don't give him anything, he's here to cheat. In fact, it's a good example because, you know, here's Vamanadev coming as a Brahmana and he's saying, just give me three steps of, you know, I just want three steps of land, that's all I want. So this is, you know, of course that's a very humorous pastime where the Lord appears and asks for something fairly innocuous, right? A dwarf Brahmana asking for three steps of land for anybody, that's sure, no problem. He's only going to take little steps anyway. He's only got short legs. But Shukracharya knew
But because he was advising, and of course Bali Maharaj is famous for he's the emblem in the nine items of devotional service as Atman Nivedanam, which means, you know, sacrificing his whole self, giving everything. When it became obvious that his three steps had, you know, actually with two steps Vamanadeva had covered the complete universe, right? And then he said, well, look, I've taken up everything now. Where am I? You said you would give me three steps, and now there's nowhere for me to put my third step. Where am I going to put it? I've stepped the whole universe at this point. So then Bali Maharaj, you can put your... and you can see what a devotee is. You can put your third step on my head. In other words, fully prepared to surrender fully. And even at the risk of the offence of ignoring the instruction of his guru. Was it guru avagya is the third offence that we say in the chanting of Hare Krishna. Guru avagya. So he committed the third offence. Yet he's glorified as a topmost devotee for having ignored his guru. Why? Because his guru was instructing him not to do devotional service, not to please Krishna. So effectively he was his guru in name only. Right? The purpose of the guru is to teach these principles. You know, anukulyena krishnanam shilanam bhakti uttama, topmost devotional service, is free from personal consideration. Where one performs activities which are pleasing to Krishna. So it's, you know, Sanatana Goswami's bribing the jailer is pleasing to Lord Chaitanya. He gained release and then was able to make his way to Puri and then be with Lord Chaitanya. And all of the other examples, Arjuna killing Karna, the gopis in the dead of night leaving their families and homes despite the risk of losing their reputation, which would mean, you know, then they wouldn't be married, they wouldn't be able to be married, which for young village girls to not have a husband, it's like a disaster. Who's going to look after you? Yet they were completely surrendered to Krishna. Now, the danger is, as is pointed out here in the purport, is that people utilize this in the wrong way. You know, we'll do it for Krishna. Right? And it's okay. We'll do it for Krishna, and because we're doing it for Krishna, then we can do anything we like. This was the motto of the Hare Krishna movement in the 70s, I think. If it isn't locked up, nailed down or whatever, then it belongs to Krishna. So we can steal whatever we like and it's okay. We can tell as many lies and it's alright, we're doing it for Krishna. That's the concern. But one has to make sure that it is actually pleasing to Krishna. You know, when an interesting story, when the Ratha Yatra parade was performed when Prabhupada was here in, was it 76 or was it the first one? I can't remember. The devotees went to they went down to Dandenong to the carnation farm, and they stole all the carnations from one farmer's property, and they then made all of the garlands for the. And just before the parade was about to start, the police came with the farmer and said, and he said, "They're my carnations." And so the police made them take all of the garlands off of the Rath cart. And Sikipucha Dara, who's a very dear friend of mine, who really helped make the Chinchin Rinpoche and I devotees in Adelaide when we first started going to the temple. He had to go to court. He was arrested by the police and charged with stealing. He told me later, he said, "Actually, I didn't do it. It wasn't me." So anyway, I don't know if you've seen the videos, but there's a video of Prabhupada talking with the lawyer up here in his room. And they're laughing about Prabhupada, they're laughing about this event. And Prabhupada was actually quite pleased that the devotees had stole the flowers for Krishna. And although the end result was quite, a little bit of a disaster, but Prabhupada found it quite humorous. So pleasing to Krishna and pleasing to the spiritual master is, Prabhupada appreciated that the devotees would sacrifice even their reputation for trying to make the Rath and Lord Jagannath happy, to please Krishna. So the principle was to please Krishna. However, we have to be careful, I think, about this. We do have to be careful. We have a reputation, actually. We have a reputation. So it's not that we can just, don't worry about the stop signs, the red lights, the road rules. I'm Krishna's agent, right, on a mission from God. Right. And this does worry people. We've got these religious zealots, fanatics. What won't they do, to please their lord, so to speak? Right? And you see that fanaticism manifest in religious traditions, who then go and blow themselves up and blow up other people as well. And so there's a valid concern, as is mentioned here. In the modern world, there is no clear understanding of spiritual authority, and moral men consider any appeal to transcend morality to be an invitation to fanaticism, anarchy, violence and corruption. And they're justified in being concerned because, if you look at, modern or current history, that's exactly what's being done in the name of religion, if you like, and in the name of pleasing God. People are blowing themselves up. So this principle also has to be ultimately pleasing to Krishna. And so it has to be understood what is actually pleasing to Krishna. Therefore, we need to study the Vedas and understand these principles. We need to understand what is... Prabhupada mentions, there is routine work, there's capricious work, and there's work in emergencies. Right? Right? Routine work is what we do routinely, as is required. Generally, that fits into even for the devotees, that fits into the category of piety, if you like, or goodness. So much of what we do is devotional service in the mode of goodness. pretty much of what we do, or we're supposed to do. That doesn't mean that we're not active and that there's not action. You know, sometimes people think the mode of goodness means just sort of like, you know, Om Shanti kind of activity. No, devotees. Mode of goodness means detached, devoid of passion. Mode of passion means not that you're active. Mode of passion means full of longing and desire for material enjoyment. That's the mode of passion. Whereas a devotee is very active, but in a detached way for Krishna's pleasure. That's mode of goodness. Sometimes people think, oh, he's all running around doing this and doing that. You know, he's in the mode of passion. No, if he's doing it for Krishna without personal ambition or motivation, then it's actually the mode of goodness. The example that I like to give, we were discussing this the other day, is of, you know, Jamuna prepared one preparation in the whole day she was working with Prabhupada in the first, you know, the first wedding that Prabhupada performed. And in the meantime, in that same period of time, Prabhupada cooked 14 or 15 preparations for 150 people by himself. So that means he wasn't standing still. He was very active, but he was doing it for the pleasure of Krishna, for the pleasure of the devotees. So that's not the mode of passion. So our activity is generally in the mode of goodness, that is. And so that's prescribed duties. Now, capricious action means what? What's capricious mean? Huh? Whimsical, yes. Capricious means on a whim. On a whim. So what's capricious activity motivated by? What mode of material nature? Ignorance maybe, but passion more likely. Passion. Ignorance possibly, yes, but generally passion. Impelled by some material desire. And then emergency work. Emergencies, just like when Krishna instructed Arjuna to kill Karna. It was an emergency. Krishna wanted the gurus wiped out. Karna, you know, practically speaking, nobody was going to be able to defeat Karna in a fair fight. So when Krishna saw the opportunity, okay, finish him off. Now, ordinarily that might be called capricious, right? Might be called, it's not routine. It breaks the rules. But because it was done to please Krishna, under Krishna's instructions, therefore, you know, Arjuna is known as the great devotee that he is. So ordinarily we perform our activities, you know, according to the just like there's a, just one point, because it's not the brahmacharis here, but you know, there's a bit of a debate. Should brahmacharis go to weddings? Right? Should brahmacharis go to weddings? Now, ordinarily, maybe not. But should sannyasis perform wedding ceremonies and arrange the marriages of their disciples? Right? Now, ordinarily not. But we saw Prabhupada, because we know that, you know, there are samskaras and there's a whole process that we go through whereby we get purified. Therefore, on occasion, knowing the whole purpose of a wedding ceremony and that it is ultimately for the purification of everybody involved, then, you know, brahmacharis and sannyasis can go to weddings. If they don't want to go, we're not going to say, you know, twist their arm off and say, you've got to go to the wedding. Huh? But if they want to go, they understand the principle. Oh, my friend's getting married, and I want to encourage him in his devotional service because that basically facilitates his devotional life. Let him go. No problem. Could be a chance of a good feast in it. Right? Because in the brahmacharis, the really staunch brahmacharis say, you can deliver the feast to the ashram for us. Well, strictly speaking, hang on a second. Brahmacharis don't go to weddings. But we do. Why do we? Not a material activity, actually. Samskara is performed in the presence of the brahmanas, in the presence of the deity, in the presence of the Lord Vishnu. He appears in the fire. So it's a sacrifice, it's a yajna. It's done for the pleasure of the Lord. So therefore it's pleasing to Krishna. Those activities, those sacrifices that are performed for the pleasure of the Lord, is ultimately pleasing for Krishna. So one who understands that can participate, whether he's a sannyasi or a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, doesn't matter. Because he understands the purpose of the activity ultimately is for pleasing Krishna. Isn't it? That's what for. It's a sacrifice. We ultimately have to see the purpose of the activity. When we see the purpose is for pleasing Krishna, then we can be wholeheartedly supportive of such activity, even if it appears to be impious. As in, you know, the gopis going out in the dead of night, Arjuna killing Karna, Sanatana Goswami bribing the jailer. Bali Maharaj disobeying his guru. Generally speaking, we don't disobey our guru. No? Generally speaking, we go to bed, you know, before 9 o'clock. We don't stay out late at night. And this is for the Sankirtan party sometimes. And then ultimately, but then this principle is adhered to. Vedais cha savayadaham eva vidyaha. You know, these activities and all of the Vedas are meant to ultimately bring us to the point of knowing Krishna. So, does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Mr. Nair. Yeah. I'm not sure whether he asked Krishna, but Prabhupada certainly he said he was quite happy that he died. I've had a similar experience myself.
He said that snake had disappeared.
Yeah. A saintly person doesn't mind if a snake is killed. Ordinarily, all living entities are protected, except for those who are very envious. Yeah, you know, that particular personality had already cheated others by, you know, taking money from them and then arranging the contract in such a way so that it could not be fulfilled, couldn't be executed. And so then the people who have paid the deposit, they forfeit their money. Sorry?
Yeah, it was Krishna's money.
Krishna's money, yeah. And you know, the interesting thing is that Prabhupada, see, Sumati Muraji's house is just near Juhu, in Juhu, not far from the temple. Prabhupada used to go past there. And he knew that particular location and that plot of land. But prior to, you know, leaving India.
Also, his wife came in the shadow of Shilapopal.
I beg your pardon?
After the husband was there, Mrs.
Yes. Yeah.
Mrs. Nair came and took shelter of Shilapopal.
Yeah.
She knew what her husband had done.
Yeah. They probably already have been in the 1970s. Yeah. You don't need to worry too much about the flowers around here having been offered to Krishna. They all got their fair share of engagement quite some time ago. Go and ask him. Not necessarily, because even Krishna's, you know, the Ishapanishad says that everything animate and inanimate is owned and controlled by the Lord, but we should respect or honour that which is put aside as others' quotas, knowing well to whom it belongs. So that doesn't mean that we could just walk around, you know, this is what the devotees would do. Look, this is all Krishna's, great. What can I take? But that's ignoring the fact that Krishna gives, you know, you the facility to do your service. So that doesn't mean, you know, that one of the Brahmacharinis can come up to you and say, oh, gee, it's all Krishna's, I like your sari, take it. And, you know, and this used to happen in the Brahmachari ashram. The new devotee would turn up and the Brahmanas would sort of like hover around and check out what he's got and encourage you to give things in charity to them. They say you'll make lots of spiritual advancement if you give in charity to the Brahmanas. So, you know, your watch would be gone. I had a guitar. I had a 12-string guitar, which cost me a bit of money. In those days, I think about $300 I paid for it, which was, in those days, quite a bit of money. It was a good guitar. And one devotee came from Sydney, and he was talking to me. He persuaded me to give him the guitar. Right? Yeah, give it to the Brahmanas. You know, what do I need? It's just Maya anyway. But then Ushapati found out about it. He was the ashram leader. Ushapati found out that I'd given away. He hopped in the car and he drove out to the airport and he found that devotee. He got the car and he brought it back. He brought it back. Because yeah, he knew that the devotees were a bit like sharks, you know. It's all for Krishna. So we have to recognise this is given to that. So he's got his block of land and that's his. And it's okay, that's sanctioned. Right, the laws of the land are ultimately represent the authority of Krishna. There has to be some decorum and some structure and order. Otherwise, you know, the Hare Krishnas would have raided all of the gardens around here, taken all of the flowers, which they did. In the seventh, you know, there were a number of things that the devotees did here that endeared them to the local residents. No. One of them was they'd steal all of their flowers. Yeah, possibly. Possibly, but by and large, we are law-abiding citizens. And the law is generally fair. Generally. Right? That's why you have, you know, justice with a blindfold and a scale. Which means you're impartial, basically. Meant to be impartial. Meant to be, not always. So, you know, one of the things that Sikhi Puchadara taught me was, in early in my devotional career, was that
You can go and ask people for things and they'll give them to you. I was surprised, you know. We went out to Wakery and Renmark and we turned up to these big orchards, you know, out in the Riverland. There's just acres and acres and acres of orange and lemon, you know, just incredible. So Sikki Pucha would just drive up, knock on the door of somebody farmer's place, and he'd say, you know, we're feeding homeless people, young people in the city, you know. He said, I got one of them with me, that was me. And we, you know, wonder if you'd like to give a donation for a festival that we've got on the weekend. They said, yeah, sure, I'll see that. See those acres over there? You can pick as many oranges and lemons as you like. So then I thought, wow. You know, I was thinking, what's he going to do? This is ridiculous. If this guy knows he's a Hare Krishna, he's just going to say, get out of here. But they just... We went up into the hills to the daffodil growers. And I was thinking, oh boy, this is ridiculous. He's just driving up into this guy's driveway and going to knock on the guy's door and ask him for some flowers. And the guy's, and I was thinking, he'll never give him any flowers. So anyway, he just knocked on the door, told him what was going on. The man said, yeah, sure, see that lot of flowers over there? There's a whole big row of daffodils. He said, you can have every one of those. You know, they're ripe now. They won't be ready for the market. I'm not going to be able to sell them. They're just going to die anyway. You can have them. I was like, wow. Far out. It never occurred to me you could just walk up to people's houses and ask them for stuff and they just go, yeah, take it. So it's better to, you know, okay, they benefit from pinching it. Right? But better ask them. That way they do it knowingly and they actually make more advancement by doing that. Right? So go and see the Italian man and say, take him some prasadam. Take him some prasadam and make friends with him and say, you know, when the roses are ready to fall, can I take them and we'll use them at the temple? I bet you'll say, well, what's he going to say? You'd be surprised what he might say, but anyway, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Farupa, you had a question? Yeah. That's called capricious work. Accepting and rejecting, that's the mind. That's the mind. Ooh, I like this. No, I don't like that. But it's really funny. I don't know whether this is see, devotional service, whatever it is actually pleasing to Krishna. And we can get a taste from it if we can relinquish our mental conditioning and just embrace it as service. For me, it was the kitchen cleanup. It was a challenge. You know, you'd be in the kitchen for 3 hours from 6 till 9. And all you're doing is cleaning. I mean, how boring. Let's face it. Boring stuff, right? Cleaning. And not only that, people keep on coming into the kitchen to steal the Maha Prasadam, which they're not supposed to do. But you can't stop them, especially if they're brahmanas, right? Yeah. Brahmanas used to pull rank a lot, and when I was a new devotee, they don't do it so much these days. Oh, I'm a brahmana. I can take the maha whenever I like. And then, you know, there'd be the devotee doing the 9 o'clock
offering, who was also a Brahmana, who felt that, you know, you were there just to serve them. So, hey, get this, get that, get the other thing. So you're supposed to be cleaning the kitchen. They'll be bossing you around, do this, do that. So it used to be quite traumatic. But I discovered in due course of time that if you threw yourself into the service, you became totally absorbed. So for 3 hours, you know, basically you weren't in Maya. You were just totally absorbed in service. Such that, you know, so initially when I first started doing the service, I was thinking, oh boy, the kitchen cleanup. Oh, how am I going to do this? This is terrible. 3 hours of slavery in the kitchen. Then eventually I looked forward to it because I knew that it was a full absorption service. You can make lots of advancement by doing that activity. And, you know, by the end of the 3 hours, you were basically in ecstasy. Right? But then I was told, oh, you don't have to do the kitchen cleanup anymore now because you're going out on Sankham. I said, what about the kitchen cleanup? Why can't I do the kitchen cleanup? I like doing the kitchen cleanup. So you become attached to it. So what happens is, you know, initially it's aversion. Oh, I don't want to do the kitchen cleanup. What a drudgery, what boredom, you know, what a slavery kind of service. But then when you're told to go and do something else, you decide, no, I don't want to do anything else. I still want to keep doing the kitchen. So when we learn to embrace the activities of devotional service for what they are, which is service to Krishna, regardless of the external manifestation of what we're doing, and we absorb ourselves in that activity, then we discover that everything that we do for Krishna ultimately is beneficial, is purifying. And in that sense, you know, we earn or gain or realize a certain amount of detachment, renunciation. And we learn how to, you know, basic principles of devotional service. What is it? Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. You know, we accept that which is favourable and we reject that which is unfavourable. So, you know, if we're given an activity to perform, then we'll accept it because we know ultimately it's going to be pleasing. I'll give you an example. On the weekend, after the retreat, Burijan Prabhu gave everybody 7 questions and they had to write out their answers for the 7 questions. You know, what one word to describe the retreat, one sentence to describe what you... what your experience was. And then, so we read those out and shared those amongst each other as a group. Then he said, you know, questions 5, 6, and 7, you can break up into small groups. So we broke up into groups of 5. And he said, now you can share those amongst each other. But then once everybody was sitting down and they were all sharing, then he said, now I want you to prepare a drama that you have to perform in front of everybody else of one of those points. So, you know, my mind was saying, this is ridiculous. You know, how do I get out of here? Get out of here, this is ridiculous. Why do you have to embarrass yourself in front of all of these people? So this is where, you know, the mind's where you've got to watch the mind. You're given something, and of course, and also, you know, we were trying to work out what we should do. There's 95 other people in the room all talking at the same time. You can hardly even hear yourself think. Right? We've just chanted, you know, 64 rounds a day before with everybody making so much racket, you know, that it's like, just to hang on to chanting your own rounds, it's like, whose rounds have I chanted here? So the mind's disturbed, humming and buzzing. Right? That's how I felt. I thought, this is ridiculous. What a stupid thing to do, you know. We have to do a drama in front of everybody. Anyway, I have had that experience before. So that, okay, let's just sit this out. This is just the mind carrying on, you know. 50 excuses
in a fraction, you know, in one moment as to why you shouldn't do something. But then, you know, if you just tolerate the mind's being disturbed, then eventually the intelligence will kick in. The intelligence will kick in and say, oh, it's not too bad. You know, you can think of something. You know, you can eventually rationalise, understand the situation for what it is and realise, you know, in a situation where you're given a service that you might not like to do, or initially the initial reaction is, ooh, what are we going to do this for? Is to appreciate, well, it's for Krishna. Krishna will look after me. So far, so good. Huh? We've got thus far and we're okay. And when you think about it, you know, our devotional service is extremely challenging for the false ego and the mind. Huh? I was thinking at that time, how our culture is very much, it exposes us. Our culture exposes us. Just in Harinam, for example, you know, you have to go out on Harinam. So you're out with, you know, out in public chanting Hare Krishna. Here's the Hare Krishna, so you're on the spot. So that kind of activity can be very challenging. Many activities that we perform are challenging to the false ego. The beauty of those activities is, though, that when we learn how to perform them, we realize that actually, you know, all of these fears, all of this trepidation, all of these considerations about, well, what will people think and how will I feel? You know, why am I being inconvenienced? We realize that actually these are great impetuses for making advancement in devotional service, giving up these mental. It's challenging because the mind can be like a real cow, right? But if we tolerate the mind's reactions and understand the service is, you know, it's for Krishna. I'm doing this for Krishna, I'm not doing it for myself. Then we benefit. That's when we benefit. And, you know, one of the first principles in the 64 items of devotional service, we take shelter of the Guru. We inquire from him. He gives instructions. We receive those instructions. But then Rupa Goswami says, one has to be prepared to accept things that ordinarily one might not. And one has to be prepared to reject things that ordinarily one might keep. So they, you know, automatically, Rupa, you know, in the beginning, Rupa Goswami is warning us, right? You are going to be shifted out of your comfort zone. But the benefit of doing that is that we'll make advancement very steadily, very surely in our devotional service. Okay, I'm going to get in trouble for giving class for too long. Gantarai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jai.